Nazism, Part 2. In Part 1, various groups as a class were identified, not with particular names, but as group names or agency names. And it's very important to understand that we must be impersonal in our treatment work. For that reason, in this audio, the attempt will be made to be more generic than in the first one, and specifically indicate how the system can be utilized, applying each of the seven synonymous terms and their qualities to the situation at hand. It is suggested that one listen to the two audios on how to negotiate with the devil. The definition of devil from the Christian Science textbook, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy, was quoted in those two audios just referred to, and I will repeat it here. Devil. Evil, a lie, error, neither corporeality nor mind, the opposite of truth, a belief in sin, sickness, and death, animal magnetism or hypnotism, the lust of the flesh, which saith, quote, I am life and intelligence in matter. There is more than one mind, for I am mind, a wicked mind, self-made or created by a tribal god and put into the opposite of mind, termed matter. Thence to reproduce a mortal universe, including man, not after the image and likeness of spirit, but after its own image. In this definition, it includes the term animal magnetism. Elsewhere in her writings, Mary Baker Eddy indicated that animal magnetism is a word or term to include all evil, and that statement is independent of what form the suggestion may be. It is interesting that the glossary being in alphabetical order, the next one in the glossary is dove. And that appears to be just about exactly the opposite of devil. It reads, dove, a symbol of divine science, purity and peace, hope and faith. In the definition of devil, when Mary Baker Eddy states that it is neither corporeality nor mind, and that's a lowercase mind, meaning the human element of mind, as opposed to the divine mind, which Mary Baker Eddy clearly states is the real mind, the one with the capital M, as it is immortal, and with the lowercase, it is termed mortal mind. And she also states that that is an oxymoron, because since mind is immortal, there could be no mortal mind. Therefore, the word mortal could not be associated with the word mind. When she states in this definition of devil that it is neither corporeality nor mind, it must be realized that we are giving devil a corporeal nature if we name a group of people or a class of people or a government agency, even referring to the generic name, such as I just stated, government agency. That's giving corporeality to the devil or evil or animal magnetism or hypnotism or any of the other things mentioned in that definition of devil. A political party is giving it a corporeality. A country, whether it's foreign or domestic, is giving it corporeality. So the defining must be more generic than even stated in part one under the term Nazi or Nazism. And I did state it in those generic terms, such as a political party or a government agency or a foreign country. I didn't name them, I didn't title them, but still it was giving it an element of corporeality. And after the audio was finished, it was realized that that was a mistake. A more accurate way to define a problem in an impersonal way, the terms political party or country or government agency should be replaced with the terms individual, collective, or universal. When these audios are provided, it must be understood that they are completely unedited and unprepared in advance. The attempt is to only listen for the still small voice and let it do the talking. That is the object in all of these audios, which are labeled treatments from Mary Baker Eddy Institute. One caveat to that is that if a particular reference comes to thought along with the still small voice, then unless it is memorized, I would stop the recording and look up the quotation and read it and or refer to it. With this foundation just explained, let's continue and see what messages might be applicable to further define how to reverse the belief of Nazism. The trees in Northern California that are known as the redwood sequoias are known to have a very expansive network of bonded roots under the ground in any particular stand of the trees. So instead of interfering or overlapping the roots with another redwood that is adjacent to it, or the roots that might come from a redwood that is some distance away, they bond together and form a network whereby the strength of all of them together, the unity, provides tremendous resistance to various things such as storms, fire, lightning. And this is a very easy way to defeat any kind of evil, and that is to be united. The goal, of course, is to be united with the Christ consciousness, which is the consciousness of God. Consciousness is a term that is associated with the synonymous term for God, truth. Motive is another one that is a part of truth. It is not a matter of being united with individuals. It's a matter of being united with the one and only God. Now, obviously, if two people are both striving to be united with God, then the two individuals become bonded involuntarily. Think about a sun that is out in the distance in the atmosphere. If you are looking at that sun and another individual is looking at that sun, as you look more intensely, the line of vision of the two people become closer and closer together, because there is a distance between the people, wherever they happen to be standing or sitting or whatever. But as they look at a common point out in the distance, their line of vision becomes closer to each other. And of course, that forms a triangle. So when one is working in any kind of a group, and again, that would be collective. The term collective would be useful, or even universal. Mary Baker Eddy stated that if she had only a few Christian scientists that had the same goal and kept their thought pure, that they would be able to change the world. The unity is the key. The unity of striving to be a reflection of the Christ consciousness. Soul is a very important term that relates to what we're talking about here, because soul is sense. Spirit is the only substance that is defined by Mary Baker Eddy and supported in the Bible. And if one thinks about spirit as being the only substance, then the only senses of soul are spiritual senses. Not corporeal, not personal, but universal. Universal, impersonal, spiritual senses. When one is looking, if one focuses on the spiritual qualities of what they're seeking or what they're already observing, that automatically removes the veil that the human element blocks. In other words, if we're looking only from a human perspective, we are blocking out the spiritual. We're blocking out an unlimited opportunity to get closer to God. In everything we think, say, or do, if we utilize the moment, which is the smallest measurement of time, if we utilize the moment to translate whatever appears in a physical form, if we translate that to the real spiritual identity, then we're thinking more and more about God, about the real identity, the spiritual sense of what we are viewing. Now, there's an example of network, because mind is the action of seeing, but soul is the sense. In other words, like the atmosphere of the seeing, and so is spirit. Spirit is contributing to the atmosphere because that's the substance. And of course, motive, which is a part of truth, is also contributing to it, because that means that if we are having a spiritual motive in translating what we're looking at or seeking, then the motive, which is truth, becomes a part of the network in our individual effort to focus on the reality, which is all of a spiritual nature, instead of the corporeality, which is devil, evil. Anything unlike God is evil, a representation of the term devil. Anything at all and everything. Mary Baker Eddy has stated that often the distance between success and failure is how we use the moment. And also there's a focus on praying ceaselessly. I believe that means to be using the moments to make sure our attention is on the spiritual nature of whatever we're thinking, saying, or doing. And of course, the thinking should be eliminated as much as possible so that we can reflect the knowing of God. Since God is all-knowing, thinking is not required on the divine level, because it's already known. It's stated that a thought has to be a system of education. But an angel message from God, which is an idea or a derivative of it, that does not have to be a process of material education, but it is known. There's no thinking involved. It is already known. Now, to get from the point of thoughts to the source of a divine message, one has to do what Mary Baker Eddy said Jesus was a perfect example of, and that is to amplify the humanity in order to be able to touch the hem of divinity. She stated that the humanity of Jesus is what enabled his divinity. So the humanity of expressing love is the terms that are defined by Henry Drummond in the book, The Greatest Thing in the World, where he covers the quotations in Corinthians. Consideration for others, thoughtfulness for others, kindness, patience, tenderness. These things are mentioned on pages 115 and 116 as the qualities under moral. Depravity, on those same pages, discusses terms that relate to devil and evil. So that's the lowest form of life, is depravity. And moral is a step above that. And of course, divine is the highest step. That's the knowing step instead of the thinking step of the moral, or the consideration of others, caring for others and so forth. That's the moral level, which is relative because it's talking about the human, but it's talking about striving for the divine. Some of the qualities of mind are creative ability, under omniscience, we have knowing, wisdom, and intelligence. Thinking about the capacities of infinite mind, that includes things such as functionality and capacity. The capacity is available. The functionality is available. And if we search in an intelligent, wise manner, it will be outlined to us how we can get a better vision of reality. And if we use the action of the one and only infinite divine mind and combine that with intelligence, wisdom, and knowing, and that along with the creative nature of mind, we will be able to provide performance. That's the end result. When you combine those things, action brings about performance. And real performance comes from the spiritual nature of the elements. Suppose that one has a hobby of sports or even a profession. the spiritual way to approach that would be to forget about the performance of other ones that might be in a sports contest, whether it's a football game or a wrestling match or car racing, whatever it is. Forget about how well someone else is doing and think about what is the perfect way to perform whatever function that I'm striving to perform. So compare one's efforts with perfection, not with personality. I saw a movie in the last year or so that was about a lady that was training other ladies for running as a competitive sport. And she says, don't worry about the other people on the track. You're not supposed to be running their race. You are supposed to be running your race. And in the training session, building up to where there would be a competitive meet of racing other educational institutions and so forth, she would use a stopwatch and she would require them to take one lap around the track, the training track, and to have it be exactly the number of seconds or minutes, combination of minutes and seconds, that it was supposed to be. She would say, I want you to run this in this specified amount of time. So they would have to mentally realize what that was all about. And if they did it too fast, she would make them do it again. If they did it too slow, they would be required to do it again. And until they were able to match up mentally with the performance that was required physically to match the time that she felt was the right time for training purposes. One match that they were going to had this person that had a lot of publicity about themselves. It could have been other people that were promoting her, but she was supposed to be really very good. She did not run the race at a consistent pace, the one that had all this publicity. And the trainer that I'm referring to here wanted the race to be run at a constant pace. She said, don't worry about whether they get out of the starting blocks faster or whether they pass you at some point while you're running the race. She says, you run your race at the pace of which you were trained to do. Don't even worry about whether you win or not, because winning is not the object of being in a race. You are in a race against perfection. You're striving to be performing in a perfect way. All the elements, whether it was form or, you know, whatever. You're wanting to win the competition with perfection. In other words, you want to match perfection in what you're doing. And then the beauty was when they came to the biggest race of the whole movie, when it was over, they couldn't find the teacher, the instructor, the coach. She disappeared. Because she wasn't there to be congratulated on what she had done in training her girls to be disciplined to do what she had trained them to do. She wasn't looking for a reward. And that was a beautiful lesson in itself, that the girls that were in the competition should not be looking for a reward for doing it correctly. In other words, perfection is natural. It's not something special. It should be the normality of how we operate. There's a belief today that things that are really, really terrible, in every category that one can think of, that should be normalized and accepted in which it is totally ungodlike. It's like Sodom and Gomorrah. It was so bad, they couldn't find anyone that was worthy of being saved. God kept asking him, give me this many men that are worthy in this community. And then he lowered the number. Of course, this is a Bible story, and a lot of Bible stories are not true in actual events, but they're to teach a lesson. And of course, keep in mind that for many, many periods of time, there was no way to record things. They certainly didn't have computers or even paper to write on. So it was handed down verbally, generation to generation. And if you've ever played that game where the participants line up in a straight line, and the first one in the line, at one end of the line, is given a piece of paper with text on it, and they're supposed to read it, and then the text is taken, the paper is taken away, and they're supposed to relate it verbally to the one standing next to them. And by the time it gets down to the end of the line, what the person heard from the one next to him was totally different than what the original piece of paper had written on it. So the story is that the way they play the game is that they read both, they have the last one write down what they say they heard, and they compare it to the first piece of paper that was given to the first one in line, and they're totally different. So imagine how many changes there were in the Bible during the period of time it was verbalized. Not to mention the changes that were made by corrupt individuals that were trying to promote a particular dogma. And when humans are involved, that is automatic. Everyone trying to self-rationalize what they feel strongly about, whether it's true or false. if one reads on our website the definition from Encyclopedia Britannica, what Nazism is, they will see that that is the main features. That the leadership is promoting a particular line of thinking that is based on one person, the dictator. The dictator makes all the decisions on what is going to be true or false. And that's what everybody has to believe. They're forced to believe it because they are reminded of that day in and day out through the various forms of media that they have available at the time. That's basically the same thing we have right now. The media is what is forming thought. What media are we going to listen to? Mary Baker Eddy gives us the definition of God throughout Science and Health in the form of saying God is this, God is that, or mind is this, or spirit is this, soul is this, principle, life, truth, and love. All seven of the primary synonymous terms for God. Thousands of times in Science and Health, she mentions, you know, one or another, or a combination. We have to make sure that we are using the network of God, not the network of Nazism or any other thing that is unlike God. We have to be listening to the still, small voice. We have to be listening to only what is God-like. Everyone has a conscience. And it's pretty much inherent that people know the difference between right and wrong if they will close the door of, quote, human nature and open the door of the sanctuary of spirit. When we're involved in an activity, are we doing it in an intelligent way? Are we doing it in a way that benefits everyone that's involved? No, that's love. Nurturing. And intelligence, of course, as I mentioned, is mind. Are we utilizing our spiritual senses, which is soul, when we're doing the looking and the hearing, feeling, tasting, and smelling? Are we giving credit to the one and only infinite divine mind to convey the right message to us? One of the definitions of God is that God is the great I am, all knowing, all seeing, all acting, all wise, all loving and eternal. If we just think about those few words in everything we think, say, and do, we remove the personality and we amplify the impersonal nature of the perfect God. Because the senses are what we use to identify everything, are we identifying from a spiritual perspective? Everything that exists that is visible is there either to remind us of what is real, meaning godlike, or a reminder that we've got to change our view and look for what really is the counterfact to what we seem to be looking at. Just like Jesus, he saw someone that was in trouble. He didn't see them as someone in trouble. He saw them as the perfect individual, and his translation to the spiritual from what appeared to be a very defective material brought about the healing. That enabled, that opened the door to that individual experiencing perfection. And how many of them even gave gratitude? He healed 10 lepers. One of them expressed gratitude. In other words, one recognized that it was the truth that healed them. Are we grateful for the good that we experience? And I'm not talking about a physical victory. I'm talking about, are we looking at the spiritual nature of the victory? Like the girls that were running the race. Were they looking at beating, outperforming their competition? Or were they grateful that they were able to experience a closer degree of perfection than maybe what they did previously? In other words, more spiritual quality of life. Running is an activity of movement. Better action from mind. The vitality of life. Truth. Truth is sticking to the path of perfection. And if they were staying, if they were supposed to run that race at a constant pace, think of that as being truth that is invariable. And if they ran it at a constant pace, that's the victory. Not whether they win or lose in a visible competition, but whether they were sticking to what they were trained to do and whether they stayed on track with the discipline. That's truth. And love, of course, is the wholeness. So if they followed everything they were supposed to do, they were practicing and experiencing all seven: mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Principle is the system and structure. The coach set up a system for them and a structure. She set up the structure and she told them what the system was. The system was they had to have their time be what this stopwatch said. That's the system. The structure was to know what that stopwatch should be. The love was the nurturing. They had to slow down or they had to speed up so that they would match it perfectly. In fact, that's another quality of principle, is balance. It's like the race between the turtle and the hare. The rabbit would run fast out of the starting blocks and then get tired and have to rest. While he was resting, the turtle walked right on by. Consistency. How are we using the moments? How much time out of the 24 hours do we waste? How much do we use productively? Mary Baker Eddy states that we are constantly barraged with temptations of interference. She said they are all around us. All the clues of evil, the devil, and everything that goes with it, low morality, low ethics, chaos, no system or structure in anything we're doing. You can bet that everything in her study room, well, the whole home, but study room where she spent much of her waking hours, was in perfect order. In fact, if a chair was, they would clean the room every day when she would take her drive. And when she came back, you know, they would have had to have moved everything and vacuum and so forth, or whatever tools they used at that time. Could have been a broom sweeping, I don't know. But if anything was out of place, she knew it. Because it was mentally in her thought, the strong power of order. And she did not want them to put a pin in the carpet to mark where the legs of the chair went. She wanted them to demonstrate it. Frederick L. Rawson, one of the list of images at the top of every page on the website, said that we should be able to demonstrate everything mentally and not do anything physically. He was a great sportsman, and one of the things that he did was shooting guns at targets. And he went to a competition one time, and it was rifle shooting. He determined that he was going to demonstrate perfection. He looked away from the target, closed his eyes, and got his thought, his consciousness, in line with the one and only divine, infinite, incorporeal, supreme mind. The all harmonious. And when he felt that oneness to be the only thing in his thought, he pulled the trigger. Remember, he was looking away from the target with his eyes closed. And he had a bullseye. That's just one small example of doing something mentally instead of physically. How many times do we strive to do something physically by increasing the force or by the number of repetitions that we do it? It didn't work, so we're going to do it again and again and again, maybe the same exact way, thinking there's going to be a change by doing it the same way. Or even keep changing what you're doing, but not in any kind of a methodical, systematic manner. It happens all the time. It's human nature. Self-rationalize. We don't want to admit defeat. So we keep doing it. Doing it. Hoping that it's going to be better the next time. There's two ways to do something perfectly. The hard way and the easy way. The hard way is to do it with self-will. The easy way is to go to God first instead of last. The hard way is you finally give up trying all these various things and you finally say, okay, God, I'm ready for you. The easy way is to go to God first. One of the greatest pianists was asked how he could play so perfectly, and he said, I let the music play me. Are we going to let God play us? Are we going to let the infinite, incorporeal, divine, supreme mind be our intelligence, be our wisdom? Mario Brunson is very advanced as a student of Christian Science and of the system of Christian Science, as Mary Baker Eddy relates those terms on page, I believe it's 146 in Science and Health. If that's wrong, you can just look it up under the word system. She's on the website. There are pictures of, there are 10 images on every page of the website at the top. And these are 10 of the people that we're featuring at this time, each one having a specialty that contributes to the total picture of studying Christian Science and the system of Christian Science that Mary Baker Eddy defines. Jesus, of course, is one of the pictures. He taught through parables. You talk about impersonal. He didn't mention any names in his parables. He would say, once there was a son, or once there was this or that or whatever. He talks in a generic fashion. Individual, collective, or universal. As opposed to a government agency or a political party or an organization. Parables. And you know how he said about talking? He said, when someone asks you something, do you want to do this or do you think this is right or whatever? Yea, yea, nay, nay. One word, two words. You know, repeating it, nay, nay, or yea, yea. He doesn't say to argue. He didn't argue with Herod when Herod would ask him, are you the king of the Jews? He'd just say, some say that I am. He didn't argue. Jesus knew that Judas was betraying him or going to betray him. He just recognized that that's where Judas was in his line of thought. He would take the pieces of silver instead of the messages from heaven, from God, from the perfect infinite mind. When we're living our life, which is really should be exercising all the qualities of God, that's what life, that's what living is. Living is exercising the qualities of God. Living the qualities of God. Living the mind, the intelligence of mind, for example, the spiritual nature of substance for spirit, the spiritual senses for soul, the system and structure of principle. and already mentioned, the life, the liveliness, the vigor, vitality of exercising all the qualities of God, or at least some of them, sticking to the truth, like the girls running the race, stick to the system, keep the pace, even. Mary Baker Eddy says, a little bit here, a little bit there. She's quoting the Bible. Precept upon precept. Here a little, there a little. And love, of course, is nurturing all the qualities until you see perfection, where perfection is the natural. That's what we want to have as normal, perfection. And that's love. That's nurturing it. And to get there, we have to do it on a human level first. We have to be considerate. We have to be living the golden rule with everybody all the time. That doesn't mean on a human level we have to agree with them. We can agree to disagree. If we're absolutely convinced they are wrong, we don't argue with them. We say, yay, yay, nay, nay. Do you agree with this? No. Everyone must work out their own salvation. Dale Carnegie, one of the most successful trainers of people to be successful, he said, you better not have a strong opinion because tomorrow you may change it. So why argue with someone? Don't argue with them, trying to convince them that you are right. Everyone has to work out their own salvation. He read Science and Health, made a very vivid statement about Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science. If you look at the top of any page on the website, there's a picture of Einstein there. Click on that, and I think you'll be very surprised, unless you've already seen it. He said, blessed art thou, Mary Baker Eddy, for everything that is in this book, Science and Health. I mean, here's a man that studied and explored new dimensions in physics all of his life. A very concentrated focus on matter and time and space. You know, his theory on relativity, that's strictly a human nature, a relative view. He had a dear friend called Underwood, Dr. Underwood, who was on the atomic energy team. Everyone passed on as a result of radiation from their work on that effort of the government, except for his friend, Dr. Underwood. And that's what sparked the interest of Einstein about Christian Science, because Dr. Underwood used Christian Science to be healed of radiation. The only one out of the group that survived. Clara Barton, the founder of the American Red Cross, made the statement that she thought absolutely Mary Baker Eddy was the greatest woman in the nation. And here, being the founder of the American Red Cross, she was working with medicine and drugs and all that every day. But she recognized that the spirit was superior. She said she couldn't consider herself a Christian Scientist because she hadn't gotten to the level where she could be spiritually oriented in her thought, something to that effect. The top thinkers were Christian Scientists in Mary Baker Eddy's day. And what's happened? over the years, they didn't pick up where she left off. And it was diluted more and more and more. Churches have closed. The popular ones are the mega churches. The ones that do talking, but no healing. Christian Science heals and are supposed to be saying yay, yay, nay, nay, instead of arguing or trying to convince someone of something. That's human will. No emotion. But truth as the guide. Not trying to get someone into a ecstasy. But addressing the healing of Mary Baker Eddy and all of her excellent students, those which were. And Jesus, that these aren't miracles. Healing isn't a miracle. That's the normalcy. That's the normal thing. Looking at ads or billboards or, you know, on the internet, you see the majority of people wearing glasses. They normalize defective vision. I mentioned in another audio that I was going to watch a Christmas movie around Christmas time. And I checked out three of them in a row. You know, watched it for 5 minutes or 3 minutes or something to see if it looked interesting. And all three of them were about Christmas parties where one of the invitees was someone that had serious physical problems that was obvious to everyone. And they were trying to get the message across that that's normal. Serious problems are normal. Yes, it's wonderful to include everyone in our prayers. But when they, out of three, that is one of the main themes of the movies, I wasn't interested in watching it. Because the whole thought involved was a materialistic basis. And maybe there's a hope that some drug will be invented someday that will cure this or whatever. We have to guard our thought. One of our treatments is about guarding thought. Mary Baker Eddy says we must guard our thought constantly, because we're constantly barraged with things that are against the godlike consciousness. Think about individual or universal or anywhere in between, but not about the person or the name of the group. Even generically, like I said, government agency or, you know, political party. Don't even say the words political party. That's giving identification. It's evil. It's all animal magnetism. It's all evil. It's all malpractice. It's, you know, think of generic terms, devil, animal magnetism or hypnotism, whatever, mesmerism. That's what it is. Kurt Russell was asked how he compared his life to his acting career. He said, well, my life is what's real. Acting, the movies, he says, that's all fantasy land. He was on a TV show, and he was asked that. And they got angry. He walked off the set. They were trying to convince him of what should be normal. He walked off the set. Right in the middle of live filming. He had a clear definition of how to filter, how to negotiate with the devil, how to run a race. Are you running someone else's race? Or are you running a consistent, disciplined, unequivocal path of truth to perfection? God is all in all. All in all. God is the only. If we strive for that, we are striving for infinite progression, which leads to concrete being. Keeping in mind that God is infinite, there's no end to infinite progression, but it is the goal. It is the object out there that is our model. What a beautiful life when we are in the sanctuary of spirit, because the life is with a capital L. It's not having fun at the beach. It's realizing that if we're enjoying being at the beach, that the beauty all around us is a reflection of the beauty of God. The activity is a reflection of the action of mind. As we're driving the car, I had a very good longtime friend, and she said, she knew I was going to take a trip one time. She says, remember, mind is the driver, truth is the road, and love is the vehicle. Think about love being a lubricant. You know, oil is one of the things that Mary Baker Eddy defines as part of love. Think of it as being a lubricant. Love the vehicle. The vehicle enables us to get where we want to go. Well, lubricant makes it smooth because it keeps everything coordinated and harmonious. It's like water running down a mountain stream. It'll smooth off the rocks, the edge of the rocks. In fact, it'll end up putting it as sand in the bottom of the stream. What a wonderful opportunity everyone has every single day to reflect the one and only incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Amen.